there anything to be read into the announcement that former Texas Governor Rick Perry is Donald Trump's choice to lead the Energy Department. Once upon a time, candidate Perry couldn't remember the name of the agency he will now lead. You may remember that from 2011.
Oops.
He has said he would eliminate the Department of Energy, but its jobs are pretty important, if not terribly glamorous. DOE maintains and oversees nuclear safety, both in weapons programs and in power production. Is the Trump administration pro-nuclear to the extent that we can expect aggressive new building programs to take advantage of nuclear's carbon-free, emission-free qualities? In a questionnaire sent to the Department of Energy, the Trump team indicated they were interested in preventing the shutdown of nuclear power plants. They also asked for the names of employees and contractors who have attended UN climate meetings, as well as those who helped develop President Obama's social cost of carbon metrics. The DOE has since denied the Trump team's request for that list of climate change staffers. Would Perry oversee a DOE purge, or is the Department of Energy more of a backwater today and Perry's appointment less than meets the eye? Gregory Yatsko was the chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which works closely with the Department of Energy on nuclear issues between 2009 and 2012.
Well, right now, nuclear is really facing a lot of headwinds. It's very expensive. It's being challenged by technologies that don't emit carbon, like renewables that are getting cheaper, by natural gas, which is extremely cheap. And so really for nuclear to survive, it probably needs a heavy dose of some kind of government subsidy. And those subsidies ultimately are going to have to come from the Department of Energy, from in some cases from the states. So I think if you're really committed to trying to revive the nuclear in this country, it means you probably can't eliminate the Department of Energy. There's certainly an argument that says that let the market decide. And if you let the market decide, then nuclear probably doesn't have a very long future.
And so if you appoint someone from an oil-producing state like Texas to head the Department of Energy, which is overseeing safety in the nuclear industry, you might conclude that, in fact, nuclear is on the way out.
Well, I think certainly Texas has, and the governor of Texas has a strong interest in oil and gas, I would assume. And the president-elect, Donald Trump, has also indicated strongly that he wants to revive the coal and the natural gas industries, all of which, if you do, really undercuts one of the benefits that nuclear industry likes to claim, which is that it provides this kind of steady state power as opposed to the more intermittent power that comes from renewables. But if you really put a lot of emphasis in these oil and fossil industries, then it does really undermine and probably, again, put you more in line of thinking that the nuclear industry really doesn't have a tremendous future in the long term.
Has the U.S. ever had a comprehensive energy policy that includes these dissimilar sources with dissimilar sort of histories and provenance, nuclear, coal, natural gas, and now renewables?
It seems like every maybe 10 or 15 years, I think, is the cycle, Congress passes a comprehensive piece of energy legislation. The last really major one was in 2005, and that had a smorgasbord of benefits for almost every industry, for the renewable industry, for the nuclear industry, for the natural gas industry, for coal, for every technology.
I remember
really
that legislation.
There.
How's your hydrogen car doing?
That's right. So we're all on the verge of driving electric cars these days.
Right.
So it certainly is an argument that sometimes when the government tries to do these things at the federal level, certainly it's difficult to make policy. And you wind up kind of getting to the lowest common denominator where you have to give a little bit of something to every industry in order to get kind of a comprehensive bill passed.
Well, just thinking about Donald Trump's tweets on the F-35 fighter program, where he wants to bring the costs down of this very expensive Pentagon program. I mean, does that argue for a Rick Perry being an aggressive sort of critic of the nuclear industry and these plants that are being built to try to get them under budget? Is there a way to do that without, passing new legislation, but basically being more aggressive in oversight?
Well, in a lot of ways, that oversight happens at the state level. But I think certainly where the president can have a role, and where president-elect seems to want to have a role is through the Twitter, his Twitter account. And certainly, if he's concerned about cost overruns on the F-35 program, the cost overruns at the Vogtle and the summer plants in Georgia and South Carolina are pretty extensive. And right now, the federal taxpayer is on the hook for a lot of those cost overruns if the plants are never built, because the major incentive program that was passed in 2005 was a loan guarantee program. So all the loans that have gone to those projects from Wall Street, from other large financial institutions, are backed by the U.S. government. So if those projects ultimately fail to become operational, then the U.S. taxpayer is on the hook to essentially pay back those loans to large financial institutions. So, if President-elect is concerned about those kinds of things, which he seems to have an inclination to show, then I think that might be a project he'd want to take a look at.
So if he's paying attention, how many billions are we talking about with these plans?
Several billions. The exact number is a little difficult to pin down, but it's in on the order of billions. For a project that originally started out, it was expected to cost about $5 billion or so a reactor. That number has gone up by several billion dollars each reactor, and again they're almost doubling the projected construction schedule. So it just leads to a conclusion that it's very, very difficult to build new reactors in this country, which, again, if you go back to the question of whether the government will do a lot to stimulate nuclear, at some point that there's very little that you can do when the industry itself is having so much trouble with actually building the new plants that they want to build.
Well, if the president-elect is listening, maybe we'll get a tweet out of this discussion about those plants. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you, John.
Gregory Yochko is the chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, who works closely with the Department of Energy on nuclear issues between 2009 and 2012. At any given moment, U.S. military personnel command an arsenal of nuclear weapons that could seriously, speed up climate change at the very least. The urgency of that responsibility is partially why 60% of the Energy Department's budget goes toward managing the National Nuclear Security Administration. In this century, counterterrorism and nonproliferation are added worries in a world that still holds thousands of nuclear weapons. The oversight on these very serious questions of nuclear security are the responsibility of an international agency, though. The UN Security Council's Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty Organization enforces a treaty of the same name which bans nuclear explosions anywhere on Earth, in the atmosphere, underwater, and underground. To enforce that ban, it has to be able to detect them. And Lacina Zerbo is executive secretary of the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty Organization and proudly says his agency knows within minutes whether a country like North Korea has detonated a nuclear device.
We see the whole world. We have 337 facilities that are distributed, including detectors and laboratories that cover the world in an homogeneous manner, so that wherever you are on the planet, the detection is done the same way, by triangulation, meaning three stations will contribute to verify and to confirm one detection.
When you get a suspicious event, what do you call it until you know that it's probably a nuclear test?
Yeah, first, it's a suspicious event. Second is to know that if this event is man-made and not just a mix of an earthquake that wasn't properly detected. And then the last will look for the smoking gun that will give the nuclear nature of the seismic event that is detected.
Have you ever been there in the middle of the action when a test was conducted and you were trying to figure it out?
Of course. First, I was the director of the International Data Center, so that was my role. And now as executive secretary, I have staff and experts who are working. What happened when it's happened at 2:30 in the morning, I'm called maybe the next 10 minutes to be part of the action and then to follow the process until we bring the information to our member states. And this is what we do. And then we've been doing this since 2006 within the framework after entering into force of the treaty. So meaning we're basically serving the international community today as if the treaty is into force and nobody complains about it because they're happy to get the information.
Is it noisy when that happens? I've seen too many movies, of course. Are people running around sharing data, calling out commands?
Yeah, you have a situation room where it's a crisis management, so we'll be sitting there and then we'll have analysts looking at the data regularly and then, a progressive way they tell us more information. We're getting close to a man-made event and then until we say, yes, indeed, it's a man-made event, and then we're waiting for the smoking gun. And this is where we are right now.
How has the technology of nuclear testing changed? And does it benefit the ability to detect what's going on in North Korea?
Absolutely. I think right now we've built an international monitoring system that serves as one of the strongest deterrent to any hidden nuclear test explosion, including North Korea, by the way, because we've been detecting in an efficient and reliable manner all nuclear announced tests by the DPRK.
So is it the case that every nuclear explosion has a particular nucleotide identity?
I wouldn't go as far as saying this because our job is to detect any of them, and then we're geared for that. But depending on whether you have an underground explosion or an atmospheric explosion, you can talk about detecting particulate in the atmosphere or xenon gases that will emanate from the cracks through the ground.
And it's like a fingerprint or just an indication that it's been a nuclear test?
It will be a fingerprint when you detect those, because what we do, we correlate those detections for wherever we find them through our station to an event. And then we leave it to our state signatories, the responsibility to merge it with their national technical means and then give the conclusion whether it's a nuclear test explosion or not.
So how did your organization roll into action?
So I think things have evolved. Let me put it this way, because for the past 20 years, we moved from a situation where we were pretty passive due to the fact that the treaty that we serve is yet to enter into force, to a more proactive role thanks to you, the media, because you demand more, you want more information, and we cannot evolve without giving to the civil society, to the international community, the information they need. So now our job during the last test was 6 minutes after the event, we were and we remain the only institution to have given the information to all our state signatories.
All right. Lesina Zerbo, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
So nice to talk to you.
Nice talking to you too.
Lesina Zerbo is Executive Secretary of the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty Organization.